This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 21st of June. And boy, we had a really interesting close to last week and set up going into this week. So on Friday, we had quadruple witching. And by the way, there's one of the flow gurus out there, or the positioning gurus out there, that got it quite right and predicting that we would see the risk of quite a dump on Friday. But also in the mix, of course, is the repricing of Fed expectations. That has to be a component of it as well, no doubt. And the fact that on Friday, we had one of the regional Fed presidents, James Bullard of the St. Louis Fed, out talking up the risk of inflation, meaning that we would see a Fed rate hikes in 2022. He's not a voter, but I think the market was a bit sensitive to this kind of input. And it's pretty clear that the regional Fed speakers and whoever else out there speaking for the Fed feeling a little bit more free now that we're on the other side of the FOMC meeting to express their opinion. There's quite a diversity of opinions clearly on the Fed as well. So we had a sell-off on Friday. It was quite deep and it was quite broad. If we look at this S&P 500 index, I put a chart up on slide two. You can see that there's a pretty chunky sell-off. If you look at something like the momentum as a MACD indicator, showing us that we're pretty divergent momentum as well. Selling gets a little bit more serious in technical terms if we're working below about 4110. That's the 61.8% retracement of the recent rally wave. And below that, you can see the major pivot lows quite a bit lower still. Anything you want to pull out and how the market is reacting? We saw that interesting yield reaction on Thursday, it seemed, in the tech stocks, if that was what was behind it, where they rallied to a new high before selling off and not selling off quite as sharply on Friday. Again, perhaps because yields at the long end of the curve are so low. And we'll talk about that in a moment, Peter. But what's your sense of where the market is coming into this week?
Well, we're observing these divergences technology stocks, growth stocks doing better relative to the pro-cyclical high beta theme baskets, as you can see on slide four. So we have semiconductors, the commodity sector, and India down pretty heavily on Friday. And you're seeing a lot of that being carried through to Japanese equities in today's session, almost down 4% at the worst low point. That's also the Nikkei 225 futures you see there on slide four. And that's a daily chart right there. So we're pushing significantly lower. We'll probably go down and test those support levels from last month. I think it's pretty significant because you have interest rates low as well. So you have these two opposite dynamics. So right now, judging from what's happening, I would say there's the technical explanations for why we're seeing what we're seeing. There's a lot of these inflation trades are being unwinded. But then at the same time, and that goes with the growth outlook as well, right? Because the interest rate has actually fallen so much that I would say that more than enough offsets the lower growth. But apparently the lower growth narrative right now is actually gaining strength. So that's what I'm taking out of the market.
Yeah, I think it is clear that the Treasury market here is in the driver's seat of what's going on. So the Fed taking its role more seriously in terms of the risk of inflation and sending that message is really, as you indicated, of course, we need to reprice the Fed nearer term. But it's at the long end of the curve, we're seeing this massive move here in the opposite direction. What is this? Is it the market saying, wow, we have a Fed that's decided it's going to be credible? After all, that anchors long-term, crazy inflation risks. It could bring in also foreign demand because portfolio managers could say, well, look, we have a Fed that's taking its role seriously, so there's more demand there. Whatever the explanation, it's a massive move. And of course, you mentioned the Japanese stock market, a huge boost to the yen to see yields being crushed lower at the long end of the curve. Adding to that, some weak risk sentiment. That's just the best the combination you can see for the Japanese yen. I'll talk about that in a moment. But have some charts up. I have some charts up on slide three for perspective. And we've brought up the 10-year yield, which actually reacted in sympathy with the rise in yields at the front end of the curve, initially off the back of the FOMC, but then the yields got crushed to new lows for the cycle here. A very strong bid, and then showing that the twos to tens part of the slope also started to flatten heavily. Another interpretation that I've seen is that this is a sign that the Fed can only go to a certain level before it kills growth and kills not just the inflation aspect, but the ability for the economy to grow. That max level they can reach now, if it was 2 to 2.25% back in 2018, because of the added debt post-pandemic, now the Fed, you know, can top out at maybe something like 100 basis points before risking crushing the economy again. So it will be a critical question as we work through this week. In the commodity space, of course, we're seeing a huge move in gold. That makes some sense in some ways. But what is your interpretation here for not only precious metals, but any implications of the broader commodity space?
Well, commodities suffered, as you said, greatly last week. We have had setbacks in all sectors, including energy, which is probably the fortress right now, because the fundamentals are so supported, because OPEC's keeping supplies tight. We got rising demand, so oil is doing okay. But metals and agricultural slump for various reasons. But the metals is really the one that's taken this recent change pretty badly. We've seen copper and gold more or less falling by the same percentage. So that tells me it is the reflation trade that's currently being priced back out of the market, especially out of the copper market, because ultimately it's still a supply and demand driven market. In the short term, we may have some, the data is not pointing to too much support, but we still see that coming back. So we get this reflation trade out of the market. It's led to a much bigger, movement, something like gold, than has been justified by the movements we've seen in both the yields and the dollar. On slide 7 today, you can just highlight how we basically crushed all the way back down to the 61.8% retracement, close below on Friday. That's the that's around the 1770 level we're trading above right now. So that really is quite a crucial level. On the same slide, you can also see the movement in the real yield. It's moved by probably three or four basis points now since the Fed announcement last week. But still, gold is down what 6%. So something is going to give. And right now, it's if we start to see the dollar stabilize, then I think potentially we could see the gold price stabilize as well, because real yields are really not telling it to stay at these levels.
Yeah, and then you look at that gold chart, and it reminds me of what's going on. Well, basically in the dollar, but also the Japanese yen, as mentioned, less because both the dollar and the yen are strong. Dollar yen itself, the major dollar yen cross and for the Japanese yen, the most important one, has not moved that much. But the yen has clawed its way back from actually dollar yen posting new highs to being back in the range. You can see that on slide 5, and I'm very interested in that relative battle there. And I think that'll very much follow whether these longer term yields have bottomed out for the moment, or we're going to continue lower, but worth watching there if we work through that channel and below 109.20, I think, is the level I'm trying to think of. And then the dollar itself, you're seeing a major breakdown, similar to that gold chart. Something like cable is quite interesting. So I have that on slide 6, the relative moves here. You can see what's strong is the dollar and the yen on the trending charts. Very strong readings now, and a very sudden move. It's really hard in terms of taking new positions here, because you could get quite a retracement of this move and still be effectively looking for lower levels here. But pretty big levels coming up for cable. We have 136.70 is a major pivot low we saw back from a couple months ago, and 135 is an absolutely massive chart area. It's going to be an interesting week for sterling as well, with this Bank of England meeting, where you're getting the same sort of pricing of the Bank of England getting restive on needing to send out a signal on rate hikes as well, and the timing thereof. But Peter, you have also you brought some thoughts in here on this inflation narrative, and it really is going to be the thing that's absolutely dominating markets for at least through year end here.
Yeah, and I mean we have been talking about it. I've been talking from the inflation camp side of things for since actually early January. Right now, that view obviously is being tested quite heavily. But here on slide 9, I've put in 2 charts just to try to hammer it in, because we talked about it on the internal call, John, that it's almost like the market is believing that inflation is still a monetary phenomenon, in the sense that the central bank has a lot of control over inflation. But that if that was the case, we would have had very different dynamics over the past 10 years than what we've had. I mean, the Fed have said, when they went to the average inflation targeting, that they would have loved to have had higher inflation. So if they actually controlled it to the degree that the market is believing right now, in terms of the credibility talk you talked about, then we wouldn't be having this discussion. I think it's much more likely that fiscal is playing a much more dominant role, because that's the angle, that's the impulse that can bang on the fiscal constraints of our economy and create those inflation. That is what we're seeing. So the underlying inflation gauge from the New York Fed, the regional Fed there, is we're seeing an acceleration that is almost now a new record overall in a almost three decade period. It measures both offline and online prices, and the actual inflation level is now at 3.2% year over year, and I think they will get worse over the summer months. But coming back to the chart to the right hand side, that's going back to a piece I wrote on Friday. So the key thing to get an idea of where we're headed is that I think the green transformation will be the real underlying driver of inflation, and part of that is the fiscal impulse. I've drawn two trajectories on the fiscal impulse. So the origin zero is basically the month before you had the evolution of the great financial crisis in 2008 and the pandemic. And I've done this relative chart. So it's the change in the fiscal deficit relative to nominal GDP, because the actual level is not as important as the change in the magnitude. And as you can see here, the blue line is the pandemic. And we're seeing a significant change in fiscal stimulus relative to what we had during the financial crisis. And I think the key thing is here, if that blue line stays below the green line for longer, because that means that we have a different fiscal environment than what we had during the great financial crisis. And I'm still betting on that. I think the midterm election and the sheer volume of fiscal that have come from the Biden administration forces the Biden administration to push down the pedal, right, on fiscal, because if they lose too much growth and steam, that will be seen in the economic data when we go into the midterm.
Yeah, and you have such a crazy mix of factors there politically as well, because you have a single senator, Joe Manchin, who is effectively a kingmaker because he's the deciding vote, where he wants to play this, I want bipartisan support, but there's on the same time two parties that do not want to talk to each other and do bipartisan anything except occasionally maybe some antitrust or some anti-China stuff. So the spending side becomes very difficult. And, you know, unless Joe Manchin changes his tune, I wonder how that shapes up. So I think it's going to be so critical to watch for that fiscal dominance theme and ability to do more fiscal, the political situation in the U.S. and specifically Joe Manchin, really. And then on the green transformation, the risk is, of course, you have, I shouldn't say of course, that's a bad habit, the cost push side. So you have not necessarily an economy that's growing from the demand pull side, but because this is very expensive stuff, a new overlay on your economy, you're underinvesting in your old, cheaper black energy, costs go up, but simply because the from cost push, not because there's a dramatic demand or credit expansion in the economy. That's the worst environment for the Fed, because then the interest rate is largely irrelevant for controlling controlling costs. Speaking of one cost that's going up, it's a very big one for people here in Europe, and that is natural gas prices, which unbeknownst to me until this morning are on a tear.
Yeah, if you are a gas consumer in Europe, look away now. We just basically, sorry, Peter. We've hit the highest price on the Dutch TTF, which is really the European benchmark. It's this morning trading up above 30 euros a megawatt. And that basically is a continuation of a rally that's been ongoing now for the past year. You can see that here on slide 8. The reasons are several. First of all, we had a reasonably cold winter, which helped keep supplies below their longer-term averages. At the same time, recently we've seen reduced flows from Russia. Norway's going through a major period of maintenance, which is also reducing flows into Europe. And this is basically driving the focus towards LNG imports. But LNG is suddenly in great competition. There are demand for LNG both from Asia and from South America. So cargoes are basically being diverted to where they get the highest price. And that's leaving Europe a little bit short-changed there. So what is happening right now is that utilities basically have to burn more coal. And that is clearly not the direction we want to go. If you burn more coal, you have to buy more emissions. So carbon prices are going up at the same time. So we've got price pressures in Europe right now. And what really needs to change is increased flows from Russia and Norway. So we can get this, you can see the European gas stores get that back towards the close to the longer term average.
It's so fascinating with this higher carbon emission prices, because it just underpins higher prices in the manufacturing and industrial. And I listened to some Danish politicians the other day, and the way the rate, I mean, We know the trajectory. But what I want to say is that we know the trajectory is towards this green transformation, and we will be doing it. But it's just the discussion about it is so naive. They talk about it like there is no downside to it, and we had the discussion last week, and I'm absolutely positive that we're doing this right now, full speed. But then in a couple of years' time, we'll realize that it's actually quite a bad thing for the lower K. I mean, this whole being energy poor that they talk about in the South. I mean, if you're a politician, you talk about this, that it has no consequences. I think you're very, very naive.
There's already been a pretty robust discussion around that in Germany. I know because together with Denmark, some of the highest electricity prices in Europe because of the Energiewende, the turn towards alternative energy sources and the price of retail electricity in Germany.
And just look at the world's biggest fuel, oil. We are now entering into probably a number of years where we're seeing not demand going crazy, because the demand is going to stabilize sooner or later, but supply is going to be the big issue with the how oil companies now have to behave in terms of the diverting their capex towards green projects. And that basically means there is a increased risk that this will lead to higher prices. We could see, and we saw the three big oil traders last week at a conference that's all starting to talk, well, the risk is $100, not because demand is going to be strong.
Yeah. Again, cost push, though, the supply
because
side.
Because supply is not there. And we have to remember that OPEC is sitting on 6 to 8 million barrels of spare capacity, but it's not been tested because some of that is Nigeria, Angola, Iraq. What kind of infrastructure problems or investments do we need to actually get it back up? So having been a little bit more neutral on big bullish on oil, you can just basically see all these, if these continue to develop, then there's only one direction for oil. Once some of these spare capacity has been depleted into 22 and 23, and that's higher prices.
Our listeners can, if our listeners didn't listen to our podcast on Friday, they can go back and listen to the replay because look at the slide deck. We actually have that CAPEX chart on the world's mining and energy sector right there, which is down 65% in real terms in only one decade. So
it's a industry that needs massive and constant, enormous capital expenditures to even maintain, much less grow, a production over time. So,
it's an interesting discussion, but isn't it? This is the irony, John, that you have these low interest rates that would actually make it very affordable to do these massive capital intensive investments, and you're not seeing it. The capital is flowing elsewhere. It's flowing into the digital economy. It's flowing into all these other parts of the economy, despite, you need all that CAPEX.
And again, the green agenda, the ESG agenda, is to not allow or to whatever degree to not allow that injection of investment in those areas. All right, let's get back down to earth and look at some earnings this week. Still a quiet week, but I see a couple of interesting names on your overview here on slide 10.
Yeah, we have a couple of names, and I think actually we talked about a little bit on Friday, so I won't dwell too much on it. Nike and FedEx, Nike on the consumer front, but then FedEx on Thursday as well, a very, very interesting one, especially because it sits in the nexus of global trade and the logistics cost. And the logistics basket we have is the best performing basket this year, except for crypto. And then on Friday, I've highlighted CarMax, and that's because it's a used car dealer in the US. And with all the talk about used car prices exploding in the US, and with their position in the car market as a dealer, I think it's quite interesting to listen to what the management is saying about the situation.
All right. And then on the macro calendar, a pretty interesting week ahead. We have a few bits and pieces today with more Fed speakers. Bullard out again. Kaplan, also a non-voter, but he's out speaking. And then we have Williams of the New York Fed, so clearly a voter out as well later. And Fed Chair Powell is out in a testimony before a House committee. I think it's a little bit about specifically about the emergency lending program and maybe a little bit on the economy in general. But it could be a forum in which he might try to maybe push back against some of the market reaction. I don't know. Certainly worth watching tomorrow. Hungarian Central Bank tomorrow will be the first European bank to actually hike rates. That was priced in and then priced sort of the effect of it priced back out. So interesting to see what signals they bring there, and pretty volatile forint this year. So that'll be quite interesting for anybody trading Central and Eastern European currencies. Flash PMIs globally up on Wednesday, including for the Eurozone, of course, and Bank of England on Thursday. We'll preview that more thoroughly later in the week. And then the highlight of the week, perhaps, given this intensity of the inflation debate, will be the May PCE inflation release on Friday. the degree to which it surprises where the market is and how it reacts to that, I think will be critical for the next steps here in this market, which has gotten very interesting across the board, again, on the back of this FOMC meeting last week. So stay on your toes out there, be careful, and we'll see where things are tomorrow with our next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.